We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Okay, I am here with the host of the Notorious FEB, the Full English Breakfast, my favorite chess podcast, Macaulay Peterson and Lawrence Trent. I think most listeners will be familiar, but thanks a lot for coming on, guys.
Our pleasure.
Thank you, Ben, for having us.
So when I created this podcast, I made a long list of people I wanted as guests, and you guys have both been on it the whole time, and I'm so glad to have you guys back podcasting. So I'm glad that we could collaborate and exchange stories and do our part together to promote chess and give the people something to listen to when they're not in front of their computers.
Yeah, it's great. I have been listening to it from day one. In fact, Lawrence was the one who initially told me about it.
Nice.
We had just started talking about relaunching the FEB, actually. This was in December, obviously. And yeah, I remember you sent me an email and you said, "Have you seen this?" And I clicked on it, and it was Perpetual Chess Pod. And yeah, and it was just funny because I think we had had lunch like the previous week, and we're talking about, hey, why don't we restart the FEB? There's still no chess podcasts out there. And then it was like, bam, new chess podcast. but we were both immediately fans, and it's also a completely different format. So I think for anybody who's into chess and who's into podcasts, they're totally complimentary.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I was really glad to hear that you guys were back. I mean, you guys were the originals. And generally, I mean, I think we all agree, it's important in the chess world to adopt an abundance mindset. We all need to be trying to grow chess together. And if we do that, we're all going to have successful careers. If we're fighting over turf, it's going to be ridiculous. So I'm so glad you guys are back. And as I mentioned to Anna Rudolph, I don't like listening to my own podcast because by the time it's come out, I want to move on. It's like a project. It's like an art painting that you can't change anymore, you know? So
So when you guys come out, I'm thrilled, because the reason I created this was because there was no chess content that I could listen to on the go. So now with you guys back, there is. So I welcome you guys and anyone else who's thinking of throwing their hat into the ring. I think it's for the betterment of chess.
Well, great.
Yeah, I agree with that. As Macaulay said, I think we complement each other. So that's really great. I think if we had too many pods out there, it might have a negative effect long term. But certainly, I think we've got a good thing going. And I'm really looking forward to getting grilled by you, Ben.
Oh, yeah, it's coming. It's coming. The cross-examination is coming. Don't get too comfortable over there, Lawrence.
I'm not. I might stand up or something while this is going on, like I used when I used to work on the sales floor. Phone in my hand, you know, stand up and pitch like that.
Oh, well, actually, that's something I want to hear about. Let's hear about the sales floor, Lawrence. I always like to hear about the non-chess jobs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't so for about 4 or 5 years, I was working in London, working in media sales, advertising, and various related other stuff where I was, where I learned the bread and butter of sales and, it was a very, very important experience for me. I learned a lot. Certainly turned me from a boy into a man, being on the phone and doing presentations as well in person and being told no a gazillion times. It allowed me to grow an extremely thick skin, which has served me since then. The job itself has its limitations, but you know, by the end, I was managing a small team, and it was it wasn't boiler room stuff, but it wasn't either it wasn't like the most sophisticated stuff either. It was something in the middle, but I really had a great time there. I had a lot of good friends who I'm still in touch with. We really bonded as a floor, and a bit like many other sales floors, there's a buzz. There's a buzz about it when you get in a deal and you sell a product and your bells are ringing and your name gets announced and there's all kinds of incentives in the company. I really enjoyed it. I really, really did. But when I did leave the company, I was relieved that I left at that time, because it's also one of those jobs where if you stay in it for too long, you do inevitably get trapped in it. And I just felt like I definitely wasn't fulfilled doing it. But very different to the chess world. I'd love to see some of these chess players, trying to pitch on the phone, cold calling. Oh, it would be just... Imagine that, like the world's top 10 trying to pitch.
I mean, most
These
of
guys
us are
don't know what, well, the real world. They don't know the real world.
This is true, and I think it prepared you well, because between your chess announcing and the managing that you did for Fabiano, I can't think of a better job to prepare you for those two tasks.
Basically, it's all flowed. You're right. I mean, from the commentating side, the reason I got into the commentating was two reasons. Firstly, because of the job, it trained me how to talk and how to be confident whilst talking, public speaking, essentially. And secondly, that also is because of the Full English Breakfast, believe it or not. When we first launched it back in 2009, it was Malcolm Payne, who was the director of Chess in Schools and Communities, and of course the London Chess Classic, who heard the podcast and he said, "Lawrence, I think you'd be really good at commentating." And of course, I'd done bits and bobs prior to that, but doing a live commentary gig, I hadn't done. And I just thought, do you know what? Yeah, I could do that. And I didn't really look back since then. So I've been I was commentating kind of full time for a few years. I did the biggest tournaments in the world. Did them all, from the World Championship Finals to internet tournaments to super tournaments. I had a blast. I traveled around. Macaulay and I have worked on a number of projects together. And of course, then we collaborated more full time for Chess24 when I was working there a bit more full time. So my job really prepared me for that. And when it comes to the managing side of things, of course, having previous management experience, of course, yes, it is a different environment and it is a very different thing to manage somebody, an athlete, to a team of people. But you know, when for example, we managed to achieve our first sponsorship agreement with the Liberty Science Center for Fabiano, I think my previous work did me well, though I also was, I suppose I was extremely lucky to find somebody like Paul Hoffman, who you guys know, of course, very well, who's been around US chess for many, many years, and of course who knew Fabiano very well. And when I presented the proposition to him, you know, it was, yeah, it was very well received. And so, yeah, it's all kind of, I suppose, looking back now, it has flowed. There's been a natural progression in my life. So I, when I think of the days where I was fed up cold calling or pitching people for a product that, you know, in my heart I knew wouldn't change their worlds, but had to convince them that it would change their worlds. When I think about those miserable days, I actually realize just how much it helped me to arrive at something where there was true meaning. And so the work with Fabiano and that kind of, there was a true sort of desire to make partnerships work. So yeah, so I can't be too unhappy.
Okay, well, I've got some more questions for you, of course, yeah, about working with Fabiano, but I don't want to leave Macaulay out in the cold.
Please
either.
Do.
So
so I got my feet up and I'm having my spine Schorla over here, you know, very right. German.
So before we get to that, Macaulay, how did you and Lawrence initially hook up?
A disclaimer, guys. you know, I love the guys.
I know where this is going.
We were together.
Right.
It has been a purely professional relationship.
Right.
The longtime listeners will detect a homoerotic undercurrent between Lawrence and Stephen from the original set
true.
Of podcasts. But that never
I'm
went this way.
What are you talking about?
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, we were both at the Gibraltar Chess Festival, and I was still at the time with the ICC and had just gone down to do some coverage. As I did, I traveled to many tournaments and did on-site reports. And Lawrence was playing, and I think you were playing, right?
Yes, I was playing.
You were playing, and we just struck up a conversation during the social hours, kind of one thing led to another. We're talking about podcasts. I've been listening to podcasts for many years. I mean, since long before they blew up and became popular, over 10 years, and decided that this would be something that we could try. I was fortunate at ICC to be able to basically experiment and try new things and suggest stuff and kind of invent my job as I went. And so this was one of those endeavors. But, you know, partly because there was no there was a much smaller podcast audience at the time. There was no clear way to handle the publishing of it and promote it through ICC as it existed then. It wasn't something that we sort of decided to pursue as a company. But when I left there, when I resigned from there in October of 2010, one of the first things that I did actually was get back in touch with Lawrence and Stephen and start thinking about doing a 2.0 version, if you will. And that's what we did for basically monthly. At the peak, bi-monthly, ended up doing about 30 episodes, including, if you count some, part twos. And that's where we then left it until just recently. We briefly came back in 2014 while we were both at Chess24. It's a time consuming project, and we were both busy with other projects, and this was always a little bit more of a labor of love and a hobby for us. And so we didn't manage to come back in full force. But now we've been back with five episodes. The sixth one is in the can, and so trying to keep it a weekly thing. And well, you know how challenging that can be, Ben, because you've managed to publish weekly right along now for over 3 months.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge, especially, and I have a hard enough time booking a guest with my schedule, but you guys, between you two and Simon and working in an interview, I can only imagine how hard it is to stay on top of.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure it out.
I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Simon as well, who's obviously not with us on this pod today, but Simon is now very much a big part of the FEB family. I've known Simon for many years, and he's just a great guy. We're very big character. Yeah, and to have him on the pod is just fantastic.
He's new to the show, but he was also at the same Gibraltar Chess Festival where we met. He was doing commentary. And then for several years after that, I produced the webcast for the Gibraltar Festival where Simon was doing the commentary. So, yeah, we also met around the same time.
Yeah, Simon is quite a character and I've had nothing but good interactions with him, had him as a guest, of course. And he seems to be one of the most loved people in chess. So,
I think he's just he's a breath of fresh air when it comes to the commentary side, because he's quite the opposite of dull.
Right.
And he really puts his all into it, and he's got, you know, and he doesn't claim to be perfect, and you know, he laughs at himself as well when he can't pronounce a long Russian name and that kind of stuff, and it's very nice, because he's not some arrogant, big-headed, 2700 plus grandmaster who thinks everything he says is with a touch of gold. And so there's something very real and very raw about Simon, which is why I think he in the past year or two has grown in, you know, his status, and his audience has grown, and his fan base is really what I want to say. He's got a tremendous fan base for his work with Ginger GM, for his work on the Pro Chess League, and for Chess Base, and everything else. I don't really hear any bad words about Simon, and rightly so, because I think he's great for chess.
Yeah, we're lucky to get him on board, and he was, you know, a natural fit and took to it right away. So, really, really glad to have him coming in to complete our trio.
Yeah, okay, enough praising Simon. So, Macaulay, you're a year or two younger than me, I believe, and we both came up in American chess circles. You're from New York, I believe, and you went to Hunter and Princeton, is that correct?
That's right.
So, first of all, I have to ask you, if my math is correct, you were at Hunter at the same time as some true American big shots, like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Breeder of Hamilton, and Chris Hayes. TV
That's
show
right.
host.
Chris Hayes and I were on the JV basketball team together, and Lin-Manuel was 1 year behind me, but we did musical theater together. In fact, on my YouTube channel, there's a clip of Lin and I dancing together in Godspell. He was Judas to my Jesus when I was in 11th grade and he was in 10th grade.
That's hilarious. Why aren't you in Hamilton then?
Well, he had a little bit more talent than I did. That was pretty evident to everybody who was involved in theater at Hunter that the kid was going places. I would say that both of them are extremely good at what they do and deserve the praise and notoriety that they've garnered. So I actually have bumped into Lin totally randomly in Madrid, in like a random square, before Hamilton, but after In the Heights. So he was already blowing up, but not quite as big as he's now after Hamilton. And we've crossed paths a couple of times and always had a great conversation. So he's the kind of guy now who everybody wants a piece of his time, but has always been very down to earth when you speak to him. Yeah. So, but Hunter, of course, had a lot of notable figures, including in the chess scene. We had one of the first, I think not the first, but maybe the second curricular chess program in the country, starting in the late 70s, so before I was there. And that's one reason why it's always routinely been at the top of the national rankings ever since, under Sunil Weeramantry, who was my first coach. And now, has been one of the premier scholastic coaches in the country for decades.
And Hikaru's stepdad, as most listeners probably know. Yeah.
Funny story about Hunter. My sort of generation, my class, we never won the Nationals. We were second, I think, like five times, and somehow always got edged out in the last round. And it was a huge source of frustration for me, especially. I think for everybody. We had a pretty strong team, but not a huge amount of depth. Certainly that was the case in high school. So somehow we never quite got it done. But then the teams immediately before us and the teams immediately after were quite dominant.
Yeah, those things always go in cycle. I know that I went to Masterman in Philly, and we were always rivals with you guys at Nationals.
Yeah.
Always crossing swords. But yeah, it's all in good fun. And then you went to Princeton, and as far as I recall, Macaulay, you've basically always worked in chess. I know you've been into film and editing, but did you always know you wanted to work in chess?
No, it was just kind of something that I did on the side. I actually had my first student when I was about 12 and was teaching like friends of my younger brothers for $5 an hour. And then I combined chess and babysitting when I was a little older. And so when I went to college, it was only natural to start a chess program and just found a local elementary school that had an after-school chess class and kind of took it over. And then over the next 3 years, expanded it to three classes on two different days, so six classes. And we did very well in the state championships. And then I added another school and then another school. And then at some point around my junior year, I realized that my academic performance was actually starting to suffer a little bit because I was doing too much chess coaching and entrepreneurship. So I kind of scaled back a little bit at that point. And since then, my teaching has been much more limited to coaching at the odd Nationals. And for about 6 months when I was in New York, I did some school programs as well. But the chess media side came much later. After doing some film and then going to do a film studies master's in Amsterdam, it was just close to the Tata Steel tournament, which was then called Chorus in Vikansee. And I went and did a profile on Gata Kamsky, who was making his return at that time for Chess Life magazine, which I had done one or two shorter pieces before that. And while there, I just completely on a whim decided to write to ICC and suggest that I do some on-site reports from the press room completely on spec and would dial into their little Skype commentary call and do these little short segments that were well received enough that a few weeks later they said, hey, how would you like to go down to Linares and do that again? And kind of one thing led to another.
And speaking of profiles, you're still doing a little bit of writing for Chess24, I noticed, and I really enjoyed your profile of Fabiano in Chess Life that just came out. So how'd you get connected with Fabiano, Macaulay?
Let's see.
Do you know anyone who knows him?
I mean, Fabiano and I, we actually played in the same tournaments in the Marshall Chess Club when he was still living in Brooklyn. So I didn't know him personally, but at least, we would have been in the same room together. And I knew Bruce Pandolfini, who was one of his first coaches, but I actually got connected with him while I was already working with the ICC to do a story on his, I think it was his first Italian championship after he was living in Budapest. And I interviewed him at a small tournament called Rocco di Papa in, I think it was 2007. And that came out on US Chess in January of 2008. And basically, after that, we just would cross paths at tournaments. I mean, you know, he came up doing Vikansee. He played in the C group and then the B group. He won the C group, played the B group, won the B group, played the A group many times. And just got to know each other. Then later he played in the NH tournament and from there into the Amber Blindfold and Rapid. And I was very fortunate to have the opportunity to produce videos from both of those events, which were connected in the last years of the Amber Blindfold and Rapid. That's the Monaco slash Nice tournament that sadly ended in 2011 after 20 years. And both of those were, the tournament director was Dirk-Jan ten Geuzendam, who's also the editor of New in Chess magazine. And so, you know, the chess world is kind of small, and everything is connected in various ways. But it's really been just a good fortune and a privilege to kind of have one assignment dovetail into and lead into the next one that's been able to take me all around the world exploring these interesting characters.
Yeah, and it's nice that you've made a bit of a soft landing and you're able to raise a family in Hamburg now without as much travel, I would guess.
That's true. The last few years, I've definitely been able to pick my spots a bit more.
And Lawrence, are you in Hamburg too?
I am indeed, yes.
How does an Englishman fare there?
I've had a pretty good stay since I've been here. I'm a bit like Macaulay. I'm actually pretty disappointed with myself to a certain extent because I studied languages at university, so I studied Romance languages and can get by, more than get by in those. But when I came to Germany, I probably suffer from the same syndrome as many other Anglo migrants here, and that is that everybody more or less speaks English, so the motivation to learn German wasn't as great and wasn't really, you know, I kind of got by. And because I was traveling so much until very recently, I was on the road with Fabiano and prior to that almost every 2 weeks, I never really got down and knuckled down and went to a school to study German. But, you know, I could, it's not like I don't speak anything. I can do the basics and I understand a fair bit. I just never went fully into it and learning it properly, which is a shame, and it's something I might rectify now. But in general, yeah, Hamburg's a great little city. Very, very... The first thing I noticed when I came to Hamburg, I actually came to Hamburg many, many years ago because I was doing DVDs for Chessbase. So I've known Hamburg for a while. And whenever I came, I just thought, this is just such a quaint and clean place. Just a very nice place to look at, you know? When you're in London, I'm from London, of course, and yeah, coming from the east side, there are some areas with a bit more, let's say, character about them. But in Hamburg, everything's just so nice. And that's something I noticed when I first came. So when I had the opportunity to come and move here, I just thought, well, actually, do you know what? This might be a nice change from the hustle and bustle and madness of London, which, as you know, Ben, is just hectic all the time. And here you can... There's a real, really sort of relaxing, not too crazy feel about it. And I felt like I needed that.
Yeah, it's a very easygoing city. And it's great for foreigners, actually, because I think more so even than other parts of Germany, there's this sort of Hanseatic port, you know, river port tradition that people tend to be much more welcoming of. Different cultures and immigrants, as well as, of course, the English proficiency that Lawrence mentioned. So the quality of life here is quite high.
And how's your German, Macaulay?
Well, I think we're in a similar boat there. I have the excuse that since we moved here right before my daughter was born, and now I have two and speak to my children in English, and also at work, everyone speaks English. That has been the main office language. So pretty much, you know, my main exposure to German is when I go to, a government building or the bakery or something like that, which is fairly far, few and far between. So yeah, it's my, like Lawrence, my comprehension is decent, but my conversational German is sorely lacking.
Yeah, it seems like a tough language.
I think it is and it isn't. I think being an English speaker, you've got a tremendous advantage already because so many words, of course, are similar.
Just a lot of cognates.
General, general nouns are very similar, and obviously, like with a lot of other languages, the daily usage of English within those languages is also increasing. So, I think there are, if you look at Russian or Mandarin or any slightly stranger language, it's more difficult. But it's just, as Macaulay said, if you're an English speaker here, you can kind of get by.
So. Well, I studied Latin in high school and then studied Russian in college, which of course is not based on Latin, and then came here and trying to learn German, which has nothing to do with Russian. So I didn't really do it in a logical progression. But as a language, it's definitely simpler than Russian, which is, well, probably about as complicated as Latin, maybe still a little bit simpler than Latin grammatically. So, and it's also pretty logical. So there are so many irregularities. I mean, I've actually come to appreciate how, difficult English is, not so much in its structure, because it's basically learn the vocabulary and you can be understood, but it certainly does have a lot of really wacky, irregular oddities to it that you don't find in German.
Plus, regarding German, we already know Zugzwang and Zwischendurch. We know make Luft. So.
That's right.
Yeah, that's all you need to know.
We can analyze a chess game. We can do a post-mortem with our opponent when we play a tournament. That's really all that matters.
Right. Yes. Okay, well, moving on. We've obviously been talking about Fabiano a fair amount, but Lawrence, I do want to dig in a little bit to your managing experience with him. So when was the seed planted in your mind that you might be a chess manager of an elite player?
So actually the idea of doing something like this happened a fair while before mine and Fabiano's relationship started. I always felt like with my experience from the commercial side as well, that if an opportunity did arise that perhaps I could investigate it. And so it was always in the back of my mind that I might make that transition one day. But with Fabiano, I suppose really what happened was it was at the end of 2014, I believe. Was it 20? Yeah, 2014, I believe, at the London Chess Classic, where he'd just had this amazing result at the Sinkfield Cup. And, he was 28. He got to 28.50, and then he had a slight, a natural sort of regression rating wise, because to maintain that rating is obviously extremely difficult. So he came down a fair bit since his result at Sinkfield Cup. But what astounded me was that this young kid who had clearly has got a bundle of talent didn't really have anybody looking after his interests. His dad had done most of that, but he didn't have any sort of formal structure in that sense, and he didn't have any major sponsors. That was really the big one for me, and I found it quite difficult to swallow that somebody of such a stature in our game hadn't actually got a serious sponsorship deal. This is a guy who achieved the third highest rating in history, and he simply didn't have the support he so much deserves. So basically I approached him just off the cuff and said, look, maybe I can help out in some way. And then I got in touch with his dad, who was the one organizing his affairs. And, after some negotiations, we came to an agreement for me to sort of give it a try. And I think what happened previously with Fabian is that he had been approached by some agencies outside of the chess world, but that didn't quite work out. And it's a really interesting topic, because if you look at the managers in the chess world, managers of elite players, they are all, I think, pretty much all, unless I'm missing out one, chess players themselves, which is quite rare, because if you look at other industries and other sports, managers and agents from a variety of different backgrounds, right? So I think what that shows is that in order to manage a chess player, you really need to understand chess and the way chess players are. And I think why it didn't work with these other guys is because you cannot apply the same rules to mainstream sports as you can to chess. Yes, they are all elite athletes, but their needs are very, very different. And a chess player's needs, we all know what us chess players are like. We're a bit more quirky. We're a bit more particular. And I think from somebody from the outside world finds that difficult to stomach. So that's really how it started. And then we were very fortunate at the time to broker a partnership with Liberty Science Center. And then it kind of moved on from there, where I began to do more of a sort of all-round job for Fabiano. So handling his day-to-day schedule, liaising with tournament organizers, media, PR, social media, the whole lot. And I was basically responsible for pretty much everything. And I was very proud of my time with Fabiano. He had an excellent year and a half when I was working with him, which had a sort of bitter, one bitter or note to it, which was, of course, the candidates in Moscow, where he was just so close to qualifying to play Magnus. And obviously it was heartbreaking for everybody involved, everybody on the team. But Fabiano showed how much character he's got when he bounced back from that only 2 weeks later to win the US championships with an astounding performance. And I was extremely proud of him to be there in St. Louis, and then continue throughout the year to put in good performances, finishing up, of course, with the Olympiad, winning a bronze medal on board one, and, of course, helping the US to win their first Olympiad in many, many years. So all in all, the experience was extremely positive. And we're still on good terms. Speak to him a fair bit. I haven't spoken to him during the US champs. Don't want to distract him. But yeah.
Okay. So when you're managing him, Lawrence, never having, obviously you've got some, sales experience, but how, like, you made this deal with the Liberty Science Center.
Yeah.
How do you know what to ask for in terms of, money?
Well, I basically did a lot of research on what other elite players were getting. I carried out my due diligence and prepared a sponsorship package presentation where, you know, I'd approach a company. And there would be different levels of sponsorship, which is quite standard. And just sort of agreed on a figure that we felt was merited his status. And of course, they would then get something in return for that in terms of personal commitment and obligations and that kind of thing. So, pretty standard in that sense, in terms of actually...
Well, Is this information on public record, or were you just able to find out from your contacts in terms of what other players get?
It was more finding out from my contacts. It was, you know, speaking to people both within chess and outside about what a kind of premium or major sponsorship deal should look like and what it would involve. So I did a lot of just scouting around. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on the internet, more stuff than you would know, as I'm sure actually you're both aware of. There's just so much information out there. So it was, yeah, it was just something I composed, and yeah, we were very fortunate to have them as a partner.
Well, looking at it from my perspective, it just seemed like a fascinating job. I mean, even when you were a commentator, before you were representing Fabiano, I was a fan of yours, Lawrence. But then when you started to represent him, I just thought, wow, that's a perspective you don't get to hear from a lot of people. So, sorry, go ahead.
No. Yeah, please continue.
Oh, so I'm just, is this something you'd like to do again in the future?
That's a good question. Yes, it's something I can definitely see myself doing, but I learned a lot about what I cannot allow if I were to do it again. And I know a lot of people have been reaching out to me and saying, well, why aren't you managing Fabiano anymore? You had such a great year when you were working together, year and a half, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that people don't know about. I'm not gonna go into that on this podcast because I don't think it's fair. But what I have learned is that, yeah, I will definitely need to have a different understanding with anybody who's involved with the player or anybody who's already part of the team if I'm going to do this again. And it's been a valuable lesson to me. So, you know, it came to an end. And as I said a bit earlier, there's no hard feelings. I've still got extremely strong relationship with Fabiano, and I wish him all the best. I hope he reaches his potential, because I always truly thought that he could reach the very top. So.
Yeah, well, yeah. He's right there, that's for sure.
He's right there, yeah.
Yeah. Macaulay, I feel like I should let you interview as well, since you are a professional. I know you guys have probably talked about this offline, but do you have any questions before we move on to other topics for your friend Lawrence?
You know, Lawrence is a big enigma. I try to get information out of him, but he keeps it pretty close to the chest, so I know better.
Yeah, I saw your little clip with Jan when you guys were announcing an event, and you were getting grilled from the Chess 24 audience, Lawrence. So I have some sympathy for you, because I know there's only so much you can say.
The best time to get information from Lawrence was when he's doing Banter Blitz overnight. He was doing midnight right, to 8. Yeah, so if you got him around 7:30 in the morning after he's been playing Blitz for 7 hours straight in the chat.
I did that very recently, and That was really, really tough. I have to say, by day three, because I was still doing some work during the day, right? So having done a day's work and then to do the banter blitz from 12 to late, midnight to late in the morning, it was getting psychedelic out there for me. I at some moment, 6 hours in, I was hallucinating. I didn't know what was going on.
You were blundering pieces left and right.
I was just blundering. I mean, I remember my last session, I think I lost 200 points off the Luke Van Velli came in the morning when he took over in the morning slot. And he said, Lawrence, what have you done? I just said, look, buddy, I'm really sorry, but I just couldn't see anything. I was just completely gone. So, but what it did remind me of, Ben, is the good old days when I was also a bit of a degen, grinding away at the local card room.
Nice.
You know, doing the 12 or 24 hour sessions, which I did many of, regrettably so, and you know, when when you've been at a place so long, the sun's come up, it's gone down, come up again. You don't know where you are. Your body clock's all over the place. It's a very, very strange feeling. And that's what it actually felt like. The only good news is that I wasn't losing tons of
right,
money.
Yeah.
It was quite a change. It was quite a nice change in that sense.
So, I've noticed, Lawrence, I'm not super plugged into poker these days, but often if I click on a poker player on Twitter, I'll see that you follow them because I follow you. So what's your relationship with poker and what has it been in the past?
Yeah. So, I mean, let's put it this way. I started playing the game years and years ago, and I really got into it when I was at university, which was a really stupid idea because I was on a very tight budget, and it was a really unfortunate time to get into it. It was, we're talking about right around the boom time, 2003, 2004, 2005. And I loved it. And I definitely got the bug. I basically played recreationally for a long time and a bit more than recreationally. I still do from time to time. And I've kept up with it because, I still enjoy it to some extent. There have been phases where I got really sick of it, but I still enjoy it for the most part, and I especially enjoy PLO, which is Macaulay probably. Macaulay plays, but PLO is a specific variant of the game where you get four cards. It's actually a game which Peter Swidler, who you've interviewed, is more of a specialist at. And Alexander Grishchuk, for example, is a big winner online. I was never such a big online player like you, Ben. I dabbled and then, never without any success. But in the live games, there was definitely some success. And even here in Hamburg, they have some really big games from time to time, which I don't play anymore. But I really enjoy that variant. There are some other variants that I enjoy. I don't really enjoy playing the most common variant, which is Texas Hold'em, which probably Macaulay is more familiar with, where you get two cards. So I follow these guys. I think there's a lot we can learn as well from the poker world, because there are so many similarities and they're talked about very often. But in terms of I think the variety of character in the poker world is much greater than in the chess world in some ways. And I just think that on some occasions we could learn how to make things more of a spectacle from what these guys do. Of course, the problem, the perennial problem has been that with poker, because it's not a purely skill game, anybody can win on any given day. And that gives a certain romantic feel about the game. But as things get more and more math-based, and I know you'll appreciate that this as well, Ben, is, as things really do get, start to become more GTO, as is so often used, game theory optimization, my interest in it actually started to peak again, because the fact that it's getting more mathematical as a chess player and more scientific, well, that's naturally interesting to me. So that's why, I follow everyone and I listen to the podcasts, all of them, and I watch the interviews. And so I'm still, how can I say, I'm always been recreational, never been professional, never even thought about becoming professional, because you need incredible amount of discipline with your bankroll, and that's something that, I never really had.
I seem to recall an incident where you were doing commentary at the 2013 Grenke Chess Classic that I was producing the show. And you wanted to go play some, I guess it was poker, you wanted to go to the casino, but you didn't have a tie. So you borrowed a tie from me so that you could go to the casino and play all night. And then the next day you came in to do the commentary and you were a little more tired than I appreciated as your producer.
I also remember that that was a very, very, very bad night for me. So it's you know, Ben will know what I'm talking about is when it's no good. It's really no good for you. It's really, it's really just not, it's just not good. And so many people, lose a lot, in life, not just on the felt, but in life if they get hooked on it. So I managed to scale it back, which I'm very happy about. So,
but it's a funny detail that the casino in Baden-Baden had a tie requirement.
A lot of them do. A lot of them do in Germany, and a lot of them do in other places, you know, having a certain dress code. Because, you know, well, I mean, they have the right to do that if they're a slightly
like
more
Vegas.
Upmarket. No, not like Vegas. It was nothing like Vegas. It's a beautiful place. If you've ever, I don't know if you've ever been there, Ben, to the place in Baden-Baden.
I haven't. I've been to one Baden. I've been to Baden, but not Baden-Baden. Baden in Austria.
Oh, you were? Right, okay. Well, it was one of these gorgeous sort of something out of a James Bond film. You know, it's one of those ones.
Right.
So the whole dress code thing is kind of understandable.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, a lot of American poker players grumble when they go to Europe because they're used to wearing their pajamas. They're like
flip-flops.
Basketball shorts and flip-flops. Yeah,
And,
well, no, I never
can't pull that off there.
I never played, but I was lucky enough to get to go inside the Monaco Monte Carlo casino during one of
the famous
blindfold
one,
tournaments. Right. Yeah, speaking of James Bond movies, we spent a night there, but I was mainly observing.
Okay, well, let's.
I wish I'd done that.
Yeah, that does sound like fun. Monte Carlo, I never made it to. I had some good times and some good travels with poker, but not Monte Carlo. So let's bring it to the present day and back to chess. So Macaulay, you're the content director for Chess24. So what's your day to day? What does that entail on a given day?
Well, it's a wide variety of things. Anything from writing news to editing video, making promotions, doing B2B communications, setting up tournaments, broadcasts. It's really been quite a mix, and that's been one of the things that's been most interesting about it is that there is such a wide variety, and I got to work fairly independently there as well, which is a great a privilege of any job that you don't have someone who's constantly looking over your shoulder or giving you assignments. So the day-to-day was very much up to myself, and that is definitely something that I have always enjoyed, and even as a freelancer and my previous job before that. So I hope to be able to continue working in that vein. But I'm going to break some news here. I'm actually going to be leaving Chess24.
Oh, wow.
In June.
Wow.
So we'll be moving on to,
wow.
to new
challenges. Lawrence, you didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Wow, he's really breaking
news. Wow.
Well, this is very, very recent. So only
wow, I've got my first scoop.
That's right. Well, I saved it for you. I thought it would be.
Nice. Thank you, Macaulay. So what are you going to be doing?
Well, I really don't know yet. It's, you know, I've still got a few months. And was sort of finally decided just last week, and so very few people know about it thus far. But you know, if any of your listeners are looking for someone with a very strange and eclectic mix of skills, running the gamut from writing and editing to video and audio and
chess playing and teaching, you know, they can get in touch. I have a website.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a strange mix of skills. To me, as someone who's, I can teach chess and, you know, I'm a liberal arts major. So other than that, like, I don't feel like I have a lot of professional qualifications. I think you're well suited for a variety of jobs within the chess world. I mean, there's not a lot of people who've put in the time to learn how to edit video and produce podcasts and stuff like that. So I think you'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, I'm not 100% certain that I'm going to stay in the chess world, although, of course, that would be sensible in some respects. And I certainly have enjoyed my time in the chess world. But, you know, I'm also kind of at a point in life where, you know, where I could still make a more radical career pivot. And so that's also something that I'm considering, also considering going back to school. So, you know, it's really a wide open question at this point.
What's any specific considerations with regard to school?
Well, I've been looking at a law and business program, and I studied philosophy, so I also have an interest in a lot of philosophical subjects related, but I don't think I would probably go to do a PhD, although I've also thought about that. I spent a lot of time thinking and writing about bioethics, and now I'm find myself reading a lot about artificial intelligence. And there's a whole lot of interests that I have. So it's really kind of a challenge just trying to decide what to hone in on, what to focus on. And yeah, I'm just really at the very beginning of that process. So if you come invite me as a guest in 3 or 4 months, then I'll probably have a better idea.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure it's a process to sort through all of the possible paths before you. But I wish you the best of luck, Macaulay.
Yeah, me too. That's come as a bit of a shocker to me as well. So, yeah, all the best. I'm sure we'll be speaking. Anyway, so you'll be fine. Don't worry.
Well,
yeah,
I imagine
you'll
that,
be fine.
I imagine that Lawrence and I will come up with some crazy ideas to try some new things together too.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I feel it's my duty as a pseudo journalist on a recent Full English Breakfast, Lawrence, you sort of teased a new project that you might be coming. So
yeah. So that one, I am gonna do what every poker player should do, and I'm not going to reveal my cards on that one. But as I say, as soon as I know more about what's going on, there. Basically, what's happened is, yeah, I had an idea. The idea was well received by some people. Some people wanted to invest in that idea, and the idea has morphed somewhat, and now we're looking at which we really haven't established exactly the direction I want to go. So that's why there's been such hesitation from my side about telling people what I'm doing next. But as soon as I have things a bit more clear, then I will.
I've been trying for weeks, Ben, and I haven't gotten anywhere. Yeah. So
yeah. And would this be a full-time project or?
Oh yeah. No. The next move I make is a serious full-time doing this properly for a long time project. So I will reveal more when I can.
Okay.
Promise.
I understand if you can't answer this, if it's too interrelated, but would you still be doing chess announcing, or is this possibly a pivot?
Possibly not. You're right. Okay. It depends on my time requirements for this. Again, more will be known very, very soon. But I don't think I can completely leave the world of chess because
of the Full English Breakfast.
Because of the Full English Breakfast, what we're doing, and also just because it's very difficult to leave the world. Even the guys who have, you know, gone into business or different sectors, who really truly leaves? I'm trying to think of people who have really. I mean, even look at somebody like Gatter who left for how many years and then came back. It's like you can't ever completely leave it. And there's probably been one or two characters that have completely gone cold turkey with the chess. But the large majority who leave chess come back in some way, be it 20 years later or whatever. They never truly leave it. It's because we love it, right? We love playing it, and it's been a part of our lives for so long. So I think it will be difficult for me to completely leave the game.
You know, funny thing about Gata, he's threatened to retire on a number of occasions, so much so that when my colleague Colin decided to tweet out an announcement that he was retiring as an April Fool's joke, nobody got it. And it was immediately retweeted like 15 times, and everybody was sending their condolences and, oh, please don't retire. And, you know, and it was just something that he had just made up on the spur of a moment.
But like after his start at the US Championships,
it wasn't so jokey,
well, right?
But of course, the best April Fool's pranks are the ones that are plausible, that do try to sucker you into it a little bit. So, yeah. We didn't do a full-fledged one this year, although we have had some classics the last 2 years. I think my favorite was, and it's not only because it was my idea, but it was also because I have followed the Topalov and Kramnik rivalry and being at loggerheads for so many years, and have done videos about this and the whole handshake business. And so one or 2 years ago, I had I managed to doctor a photo to make it look like they were having a grand old time at a post-game press conference analyzing together and laughing, and then wrote a story around that. So I do like a good April Fool's fake news story from time to time.
Nice. Well, I've only got a couple more questions for you guys, but Macaulay, I actually want to follow up on that, because that was one of those periods where, you know, Lawrence mentioned people coming in and out of chess. I was slightly less involved in chess at the time of that Topalov-Kramnik match, and I've never properly investigated what is there, like a commonly held belief about what actually happened in the initial cheating accusation?
Well, sure. Now, of course, it was actually before I was a chess professional, because it was in 2006, and I didn't really get into it in a big way until 2007. And I didn't meet either of them probably until, 2007. I think I probably met both of them, because Topalov played in Linares, and I forget exactly where I first met Vlad, but have subsequently spoken to both of them about the other one too, and lots of other people who were there or who were very connected with people who were there at the time. I would say the general feeling is that there wasn't any cheating going on, certainly, that was something that was more or less a psychological ploy on the part of Veselin's manager, Silvio Danilov. Rather there just wasn't really any evidence. I mean, they published these really bogus photos of some Ethernet cable hanging from a ceiling and called that evidence, but it wasn't, and it didn't really indicate anything. And I think, to be fair, similarly, the general consensus is also that there was nothing untoward going on in San Luis when Topalov, had this brilliant performance and won the tournament there, and was accused by certain circles, around, especially in Russia, of cheating there and having some kind of, eye contact, hand signals with Silvio in the crowd. I think most people also don't find that credible either. So, yeah, I think, cheating is certainly a perennial concern, but at the very top level, I haven't seen any great cause for alarm. I think, you go down a little bit, even grandmasters, but certainly in amateur events, this is a much bigger problem and a much bigger issue for players than it is in the really elite circles.
Okay. Okay, and Lawrence, my last question for you. Cool. So you're a great chess player in your own right, and sometimes I think with all of the media work you do, that gets a little swept under the rug. So do you have any chess ambitions currently? Are you going to be playing?
Yes. So a lot of people will know this who have been following me. I have one remaining chess ambition, and it's not to become world champion. And I know Magnus quaking in his boots. He can rest a little now. But no, I would still like to get my GM title. So believe it or not, I am going to be playing an event very, very soon. I'm going to be playing at the Grenke Chess Open or Chess Classic, which is down in Karlsruhe in the south of Germany, which is an open tournament that happens over Easter. So it's a good time for me because a lot of people are off work or things are shut. And yeah, I'm still kind of, there's that one remaining thing that I want to do, and that is get my GM title. I've got two GM norms, and I never crossed 2,500. And at the moment, I'm at about 2,455. I just actually, I still play Bundesliga on a Sunday. So our team in the Bundesliga, Norderstedt, which is a team in the north of Hamburg, we were in the second Bundesliga, so league, if I can put it like that, Bundesliga Nord, but the North Bundesliga lead, and we're winning the league by 2 points with two matches to go. So if we win that league, we go back up to the Bundesliga. We actually played Bundesliga last year, and comparatively, of course, our team compared to the Bundesliga teams, we're outrated by about 250 points on every board per match. So we are, you know, we're big favorites to get relegated again, but that's always really nice to play. I really have some really cool teammates. So I'm playing that, but the GM title is still the thing that I want to give one last proper go at and properly study. I never really properly studied. Hand on heart, I didn't. And really got some structure in my studying because I think I've got the goods to be able to do it. But it's going to take one last effort. That's really the only remaining chess ambition I've got. I've got no desire to become 2600, win a certain tournament. None of that interests me. I just want to get the GM title, and then I can happily say I did it, and I can retire and tick that one off the bucket list. And it is a big one on the bucket list. I can't deny it. Well, we'll see.
You're right there. Macaulay and I have the luxury of being nowhere near Grandmaster strength.
Yeah, so. I mean, I am right there, and I'm not. Like you, I'm part of that very famous group of people who hang around 2450, 2480 for the major part of their lives and can't seem to make that final breakthrough. So I'm hoping that Kais is going to be on my side if I do give it one last shot. And I'm really looking forward to playing, actually, in 10 days' time, actually, the Karlsruhe over Easter.
Yeah, the Grenke Open is going to be played in this beautiful hall, actually, because we're Chess24 is producing the Grenke Classic commentary. And so the elite players, including Magnus, will be playing up on a stage. And then the Open tournament is just right there in the same great hall. So it looks like a fantastic venue from the photos I've seen.
Yeah, and looking at the player list as well, I'm ranked number 72 at the moment.
It's out of amazing.
It's extremely strong, and there are about, hold on a second, there's like 600 players. It's insane.
Sounds
actually
amazing.
More. Hold on, I'm looking here. The most recently updated 666 players. 666, baby. That's insane. So,
well, yeah, if they keep it that way, and then on Easter, you know, we'll have a real scandal here.
Yeah, it will be scandalous.
It starts on Good Friday.
Nice. Well, Lawrence and Macaulay, and Lawrence, I wish you luck in that tournament. Of course, I know you've got a lot of fans that'll be pulling for you. Do you guys? I think people know they should be listening to the Full English Breakfast. Any slackers who have not been downloading it and writing good reviews and listening when it comes out, I hope that you guys will stop slacking and get with the program. And do you guys have anything to say before we let you go?
Well, just that, you can find the FEB at thefeb.com. And, if you want to follow Lawrence playing in the Grenke Open, there are going to be quite a lot of boards broadcast there, and they will be available on Chess24 in the live tournament section. And also there's an official website, GrenkeChessClassic.com, where the elite event with live commentary will be.
Yep, and you guys are both on Twitter. Lawrence seems pretty active. Macaulay maybe slightly less, but
much less.
You guys, yeah.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter, everyone. It's at Lawrence Trent IM. Maybe Ben will put that in the notes
below the
podcast title, because Twitter definitely is my preferred form of social media. I am on Facebook, but I don't really use it that much. I a lot of my Twitter feed just comes through to Facebook, so I much prefer Twitter. Follow the Full English Breakfast, of course, at the FEB Show. And I'm
Macaulay 64, which is 64 squares on a chessboard, not my birth year.
Ah, right. Yes.
No, I just wanted to say a big thank you to you as well, Ben, for having us. It's been fun, and really looking forward to hearing some more top quality podcasts. So great stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. Well. All right. Thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
All right, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to Perpetual Chess. To hear more episodes, give feedback, or suggest guests, go to perpetualchesspod.com. If you like the show, please help me out by telling your friends and giving me a high rating on iTunes. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Perpetual Chess Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.